New York Times columnist David Brooks visited our region this weekend to receive an honorary degree at Skidmore College's commencement ceremony in Saratoga Springs. Brooks is familiar to WAMC listeners as a political analyst for National Public Radio, whose Friday segments with E.J. Dionne are required week-in-review listening. David Brooks, it's an honor to have you in our studio. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here.
Your most recent book is The Social Animal. It's hard to think of more social animals than the college graduates who are entering the world this time of year. What do you say to those people?
I'm sure the night before graduation was an extremely social night for those people. I try to talk to them about what to worry about and what not to worry about. And a lot of them are going to be worried about jobs. But I'm going to try to say to them, you know, the economy is pretty mediocre, but they'll struggle for a few years. And people in their 20s these days, they experiment with things. But by the time they're 30, they'll have found something they love, and that's really not something they should worry about. And so a lot of things they should worry about are, am I going to be more boring at 45 than I am right now? How am I going to make a decision about who to marry? One of the points I like to make, and they always look at me like I'm crazy because they're a few years away from this decision, is the most important decision you're going to make in your life is who to marry. I try to give them a little advice on how to think about that problem.
You know, I saw a slideshow recently that showed Time magazine taking a look at the generation about every 5 years and how that particular generation is standing out. Do you think the problems facing this generation of young people are particularly worse than they've been for past college graduate generations?
No, obviously there's a down economic time and they're inheriting a lot of debt that my generation is leaving to this generation.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure to spend your money. There's some malaise. There's a lot of insecurity. You know, I've spent a lot of time on college campuses around the country this fall and I've been teaching. And I'm really struck by how even among some of the brightest students, they're very insecure. They're very anxious. And I really think that's not the core problem. I think the core problem is they've been raised in such a competitive culture that they've spent so much time focusing on getting good grades and getting into a good college and getting a good career that they've really neglected some of the more important things that'll matter more to them when they're, you know, middle-aged like me, things having to do with their own happiness, their value to society, having to do with their internal moral state. And so I think we've all, for obvious reasons, focused on how to get ahead. And I do think there's a lack of articulateness about the other parts of life, which are the more important parts.
Well, let's go to some of the stuff that happened this week. First to the AP leak, which became the federal government going into AP emails. And I wanted to ask you about the idea of leaks, because for top quality journalism, it requires information being given out to journalists, information that certain people don't want released. In the long run, do you think that those leaks end up hurting the industry? Because as you wrote this week, it makes governments, administrations sort of tighten the circle.
Right. Well, I don't think that's the problem is the leaks. I mean, people are leaking to us all the time. They're leaking. Sometimes people in the administration are leaking for their own political gain. They just want to control the leaks they don't control. And the problem is not in the press. The problem is in people who are so obsessed with leaks, they want to really shut down government. And the point I tried to make in my column is that each White House I cover gets more and more centralized than the one before. That means there's less open deliberation because they're afraid if they have an open conversation, somebody will leak it. That means less deliberation, less honest debate, and more secrecy and a tighter zone of trust and more isolation and more insularity. So to me, the reaction to the disease of leaks is worse than the disease. It's really closing down what should be a democratic deliberative process.
What is the journalist's role in that? I mean, certainly we all want what's good for the country, but when someone's leaking you a piece of information, how much, you know, what do you weigh in terms of using it? Are they leaking it for a certain advantage? And is it sometimes hard to think about the greater good to be altruistic?
Yeah, I think our job is to think about the greater good. And so a couple of years ago, you may remember there was a WikiLeaks.
Sure.
Where they took all these State Department documents and they dumped them out in public view. And I thought that was shameful. The State Department needs to be able to send private memos back and forth. That's part of how they do their job. And I thought there was no good reason to let all that stuff go out in the open. Sometimes there are national security cases where you learn things that may be harmful to, say, a CIA agent who's based abroad or to one of our information sources. And I think in those cases, the press really does have a responsibility to not publish things if it's going to lead to the death of, say, an agent or an information source. But as far as I understand this case, the government was at one point fine with them leaking it, and then they rescinded that permission or at least acceptance of the leak for political reasons. I do think this is a case where they were just trying to control information for political reasons. And if you're just trying to make life politically convenient for the politicians, that's no reason to withhold the leak.
Let's go to another issue of trust. Now, the IRS had a brutal week, and you wrote that we clearly have a values problem in the federal government. We clearly have a few or many agencies where the leaders don't emphasize that workers need to check themselves or risk losing what remains of the people's trust. My question for you is, how can we encourage good governance like that and trustworthiness in federal branches when so much of the dialogue we hear on a day-to-day basis, the news information we receive, is already politicized, polarized, slanted when it comes to us?
Well, a lot of the politics is slanted, but government goes about its work. And a lot of those agencies are reasonably isolated from the political shouting matches. But they still need to be managed well, just the way a company needs to be managed well. And they have to be managed by a set of values. And you can have rules telling everybody how to behave, but as anybody who's worked in an organization knows, the values, the culture of the organization really matters. And what you have to have is leadership telling the employees, listen, you're in government, you have a lot of power, you might abuse that power, you might be the sort of person who wants to control other people's lives. You have to act with restraint, that you have to be aware every second of the day of the possibility that you're going to abuse your power, and at least make people conscious of this danger that is inherent in possessing power. And what we saw in the IRS, what we saw in the Justice Department, is people who had some power and who felt no restraint. And so did this big sweeping investigation in the Justice Department, used power to target specific political sources in the IRS. And it's just an egregious loss of any sort of common sense and decency. And so to me, part of the problem is just how government works. We need laws to control how government works, but we also need a set of values so that people in power don't abuse it. And I think those values are diminished these days.
One more question for you. You appear on our airwaves each Friday with your partner, sparring partner, and you've taken your show on the road and with EJ Dionne. And I wonder, does he ever change your mind? Do you ever change his mind, or are you sort of always on a different flank?
Yeah, no, I do think we change our mind quite a lot. There are some parts where EJ and I really agree on certain things. We believe in community quite a lot, and so we don't like either a liberal style of politics or a conservative style of politics where you're just on your own. It's just hyper-individualistic. So we agree on some of those things. And occasionally, you know, I'll change my mind about certain aspects of a health care reform bill. I'm not sure I've ever changed EJ's mind. I shouldn't brag about that. Maybe I have. Hope I have. But, you know, sometimes just a good argument is made or a piece of information comes along, and you think, I probably got to shift my position on that one.
New York Times columnist David Brooks received an honorary degree yesterday at Skidmore College's commencement and honored us with his presence in our studios. Thank you so much.
Oh, pleasure to be here.